Hi, welcome back to another Purposeful Conversation. Thank you for tuning in to Parenting Special Needs Podcast. This is episode number 19. I'm your host, Shantae. Today we're talking with Adrienne Fearn. She's a special needs mom who wrote a personal essay about how raising a child with autism is like running a marathon, but a marathon she didn't sign up for. As Adrienne says, raising a child with autism or special needs is very much like running a marathon. However, participation in her particular 26.2-mile event required even more endurance than the average athlete needs these days. Please welcome Adrienne Fearn.
In the 90s, there wasn't as much news, resources, research, therapies available. I studied, and my son's team of providers had saw his milestones coming and asked me to talk to other parents, and then kind of pushed me into the field. And I wound up going back to school and graduating with my master's in science education at the age of 40.
Wow.
And I became an ESE, exceptional student educator, a nice word for a special ed teacher, for pre-K, for early intervention.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting.
And then it segued into, because I got so involved with families, I became a case manager. Mm-hmm. And today I am the director of family services at the largest autism school in the state of Florida and the second largest in the country. And that is all because of my son, my greatest teacher. I needed to go to school to get the credentials on paper, but everything I learned from my child.
Huh, I love that you say that, because I think we all don't give ourselves enough credit for the things that we do know. We think we, you know, need to have that documentation, and we trust others that may not know our children as well.
I think the biggest takeaway parents who have children, period, should be open to: you learn from your children. Mm-hmm. And we're very quick to dismiss that motto because we're the adults, we're supposed to be the teachers.
Right.
But our children are amazing teachers, especially when they have a disability, because we don't have it. They're teaching us about their disability, and we have to pay attention.
I agree. So I love how you wrote a personal essay, you know, very heartfelt, and you know, I felt like I'm a little couple of years behind you, but I felt very similar, and how you compared it to running a marathon. And then I know you said that there's a lot more services nowadays than there was back in the 90s when you were raising your child. The same for me. I mean, it was kind of, there wasn't the stuff available and we had to figure out different ways. But I still hear from a lot of moms that have younger children that are, you know, feel lost in a sense. And so I know in the essay that you wrote for us, you compared and said that, you know, the miles 1 through 8, which referring to years 1 through 8, were very bumpy. My question is, you know, what advice or tips would you give to parents? And maybe you just shared that a little bit before, but maybe you can tell us more about it.
I think parents feel lost because pediatricians are not knowledgeable. They are quick to say either they're developmentally delayed and waited out, or, yeah, I think your kid's on the spectrum. Okay, great. Now what? Mm-hmm. And I think pediatricians need to be trained. Mm. I think that would take care of a lot of our lost feelings of where to go next.
And I want to stop you there, because I know you and I, we just said, like, our children are, you know, your son is a little bit older than my daughter, but that's exactly how I felt back in the 90s. And I have a friend now that has a 7-year-old, and she's facing the same thing. So that the pediatricians haven't necessarily changed what they're doing. I think that's a huge point that, you know, I'm getting goosebumps, but I think we need to really, you know, and I know I have a voice, or, you know, with the magazine and with the podcast, but I think we need to really work on that, because I think it's a shame. I was similar to you. She's developmentally delayed. Nobody told me the next steps. I didn't know it. And so to me, I know I felt, oh, she's developmentally delayed. Then all I have to do is work really, really hard and I can get her to catch up. No one told me, hey, she might never catch up, that, you know, so I spent the first however long burning myself out. But like I said, I have a friend whose child is 7 and she just got diagnosed. She doesn't know about CARD. She doesn't know about any of the services available. She's been doing it on her own. And I'm thinking, in this day and age, that's ridiculous.
It shouldn't happen. It shouldn't happen.
No.
I remember going to the pediatrician and, oh, he's a boy. He'll outgrow it. He's slower. You're comparing him to your daughter. No. Mm-hmm. My mother gut said, you're wrong. So I left the pediatrician. I went for another opinion. And I was very lucky. Mm-hmm. I had a pediatrician who had a brother who was mentally retarded. She grew up with. She had more knowledge. She had more compassion. Mm-hmm. At the time, had lived in New York, and through the Department of Health, offered early intervention. I found that out accidentally. And unfortunately or unfortunately, there's Google, and you have to do your own research, even today. But thankfully, there's Autism Speaks that has resources, and CARD was a lifesaver for us. And there are local chapters of the Autism Society of America. And raising a child with special needs is a full-time job in addition to raising a child who's typically developing. This is something you're not prepared for. So you're going on this marathon without any training and no coaches, and no one's telling you how to run the marathon. So you have to figure it all out yourself.
I agree. That's one reason why we started the magazine, because I felt, you know, I wanted help. And I'm like, why can't someone just tell me what to do? Because I'll do it. I just don't know exactly what I need to do. So that's why we have the magazine.
But we have to remember, as moms, you can never ignore your gut. If there's something that sets off a light bulb, don't ignore it. Don't go with your gut, because nobody knows your child better than you. You spend the most time with your child 24 hours a day. A doctor gets, if you're lucky, 10 minutes you get. And you have to weigh their opinion and, quote, expertise, but you're the mom, you're the first expert.
Right. And I just want to add on that one little thing, because I think this was huge for me learning, and I think you'll probably agree. Behavior is a form of communication. So when they're doing something, because that was my biggest thing, it took me forever to learn, like when she's doing certain things, that's her way. She can't tell me like, hey, this class setting is making me anxious and I want, you know, so I'm just going to come home and throw up, you know, I mean, so those kind of things, like you have to really, you know, listen to the behaviors of your child. And so you mentioned miles 12 through 20 were filled with a lot of trial and error. What do you mean by that?
It was experimenting with private school, public school. It was working with a new therapist. It was new diet. Mm. It was new supplements. It was also new because we moved from New York to Florida. Mm. I think as adults, we project thinking, oh my God, we're going to move. I'm going to destroy our team and his routine, and he's going to regress and it's not good for him. Well, it may have been hard, but it made him and my typical developing daughter more well-rounded, proof to both themselves and me that they'll survive and they've become stronger and better people for having had that experience.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I want to go back because that's one of the things we're talking about this issue. Can you share your thoughts on or the pros and cons that you faced with public and private schools?
Oh, yes. I actually...
School in general. No, we're just going to focus on those.
Okay, so in the 90s, public schools and where I was in New York, if my child was not accepted and I was not accepted. Mm. They could not provide education to meet his needs. Mm. And I fought at the IEP, and they remember autism was not popular then, so it wasn't a given. I wound up suing my school district, winning.
Mm.
And my son went into private school from first grade to fourth grade. He did so well that the test was, let's put him back in public school for fifth grade and see how he does.
Mm-hmm.
And he did really well, and the supports were there because they knew who they were dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
They were dealing with a mom who wasn't going to let anybody get away with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And a mom who educated herself on programs and services, and he did do well. Now we moved to another state, and now we're going to middle school. He didn't do so well, and he had a one-on-one aide, a para, which is good and bad.
Right.
If I could tell myself now, I would have said he did need a one-on-one at the time, because there really was not inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And students were not used to a different kind of student. So he was a bodyguard to the para.
Mm-hmm.
But that became too much of a dependency.
I can totally relate.
So I wound up pulling him out in the middle of sixth grade, putting him in private school for that was geared for children with high functioning autism.
Mm-hmm.
And he did incredible. And the decision was then made again, pull him out of private, put him back in public, because now we're years later.
Mm.
There's more services, there's more benefit.
Right.
He went into public high school.
Mm.
He did okay. He did not graduate with a standard diploma. And there were arguments about that too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think your son's a little bit older than my daughter. So, but they just changed it a couple of years ago, right? That everybody gets a standard diploma, because our kids were graduating without.
You were getting attendance.
Right. You were getting like So yes.
And what held him back was his math skills.
Mm.
I'm not good at math.
Right. Me either.
And it was a shame, because he was in honors social studies. He was in honors law.
Wow.
But because his math was so poor, like third grade level, he couldn't get a standard diploma.
Hmm.
That was hard. It's still hard. And at one point he tried to go back to get his GED to see if we could get a standard. Mm. And we got a tutor. And math can't be done.
Hmm.
It's painful.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I just want to ask, just because you might know more than I know about this, but what about GED? Do they modify? Like, I know now they have unique learning systems and stuff in place for, like, my daughter who can't quite get stuff, so she gets credit for doing stuff. Does the GED modify anything, or is it just straight?
Not that I'm aware of, maybe, but I'm not aware.
That might be something we need to inquire about, because maybe there's something nowadays to help him.
Yes.
You know?
Now, I will say the stress it caused on him, I don't know if I could get him back.
It's not worth it. Yeah, I hear you. Oh.
Just like as a child, really young, we did so much therapy, occupational and physical therapy, and a lot of it was done with a ball. He didn't want to exercise and do sports because he associated it with therapy.
Yeah, it's work. Yes. Oh.
So I had to hire a sports coach, and the sports coach taught him how to ride a bicycle. Because as parents, I was told by an incredible therapist, don't teach him how to ride a bike. It's too stressful for us parents, and he will pick up on it. And you don't want him to feel your disappointment and struggle. And I removed myself. And it was smart.
That's great advice. I love that. I think you're absolutely right. Or that therapist. Thank God for therapists, huh? The good ones.
But the point is, you have to follow the advice. It's one thing hearing it. Actions speak louder than words. And you can't be afraid to try, because we have to remember nothing is concrete, even though our kids think that way. We know better. And if we try something, we know we can stop it. If it's not working, stop.
Right.
But try.
Try. Be open and flexible. So in this issue, we're also discussing, you know, dealing with financial hardships and the high cost of services, as well as challenges of balancing work and a child with special needs. Did you experience that? Can you share?
If I could get back all that money we spent, I'd be retired. I wouldn't need to play the lottery. Today, there are insurance company advocates for autism, and parents need to call insurance companies who deny services, and you ask to speak to someone in charge of autism or a health advocate. That's important. Parents, and this is a well-hidden secret, every state has funding. In Florida, it is called a med waiver. In New York, it's called OPDWW. So each state has money that will take care of a child if they have a diagnosis under the age of 22. And there are a few diagnoses that are covered, and autism is one of them. There are waiting lists, but it's worth it. And that's winning the lottery, because you get funding for any kind of therapy. And as an adult, you can get funding for job coaching, life coaching, group housing, and no one tells you.
Right.
Another thing parents need to know is those very expensive neuropsychs that we take our kids to, ask your school to run the test before you go out and you pay for it. Your school should be providing it every 3 years.
Wow.
Also, check with the insurance company what they're going to cover. Our kids have real diagnosis, and we have to fight. And again, because this is so new, the more noise we make, we're hoping to make change.
Right. No, I think those are excellent tips, and I agree with you.
Also, wait, there's one more thing. There are scholarships within your state. Again, I know my state more than another state, but for example, in Florida, there's a McKay scholarship you can apply for, get money, and go to a private school with that money. There's also what's called a Gardner scholarship, that if your child is in a private school, you can get tutoring or therapies paid through a scholarship.
Right. And I want to point that out too, even using the McKay in Florida, so it's probably similar with other states as well, to make sure just because you're going to a school that doesn't offer services, you can still get those services through the public education system, which that I learned the hard way when, because she needed speech and OT and all that kind of stuff. And for a couple of years, I pulled her out in middle school as well and went to a private school using the McKay, and didn't realize that that was available to me because no one tells you.
Exactly.
You know? And it's like, oh, it wasn't until afterwards when I joined a board for helping the school district that someone said, oh, you can get services. You know, it's like, oh, thank you. 3 years down the drain. So anyway, but pointing that out to everyone, that asks, because services are still available. The school district has to supply it.
Yes.
To do those.
Yes. I really want everyone to know how important, yes, we do OT, PT, speech, sensory integration. I mean, every therapy, you must. I beg every parent, as early as you can, put your child in social skills. And it is a consistent therapy or activity. My son did social skills from the age of 6 to 18. Here's the payoff. Every parent wants their child in whatever capacity to work. At some point, your child can't get a job if they can't pass the interview. How do you pass the interview? You need social skills.
Right.
If you can't pass an interview, you can't get a job. Mm-hmm. Social skills. Social skills helps with friendships, relationships, job, mm-hmm. on-job relationships, employee-manager relationships. Mm-hmm. You must teach them social skills.
Right. And I thank you for pointing that out. I also agree, because I always use the philosophy is, yes, my daughter might have high-functioning autism, but she lives in the real world. And nobody else has a closed cluster group for autism. When we go to church, it's a church, you know, or wherever we go, and we live in a community, she has to be able to function. So similar to what you're saying, it's life. They have to know how to, regardless of their disability, they have to know how to
fit in
people and fit in. Exactly.
Because, and it's sad, but I did have to tell my son, baby, the world's not fitting into you. You have to fit into the world.
And I had to say the same thing too. You got to be flexible too. You, just because you want it this way does not mean, you know, right. It goes that way. And yes, you might want it. And I'm sharing a little bit just because her sometimes her companions will say to me, you're the only mom that really says something to her. Cause like they'll call me cause she's mad. Somebody didn't do something the way she wants it. And she'll call me and they're all, you know, she's getting ready to have a meltdown. And I'm like, hey, you have to breathe and get over it. I mean, this is life. You can't like, you know, unless you want to come home and sit in your room. Hey, there's a lot of kids that do that, you know, but and if not, you have to shake it off, do your breathing exercises and move on, because that's life. Just like we all do.
Yes.
And the companion will be like, you know, I just have to tell you, none of the other moms do that. And I'm like, exactly. Well, I can't help it. This is how we work in our family, you know?
Me too. You got to speak the truth, because right. The world is hard. And you know what? Better they learn the hardness from us, because when they face it, they're used to how to deal with it.
Right.
You talk the truth. I'm sorry, it hurts.
Right.
But it's the way it is. And just to kind of go back, to give advice to moms when you get the diagnosis, for the moment you hear it, the diagnosis, yes, you're allowed to mourn. You're allowed to cry. You're allowed to feel sorry for your situation, but you have to stop it, because if you live in pity for your child, they will not grow and neither will you. And neither will your marriage, your family dynamics. It is sad, and it is a death of a dream, but it is not a death of the child. And again, I go back to, I would not be living the life I'm living if I did not have my son. He taught me. And same to you, look what you have created because of your daughter. They have given us a gift.
Yes.
They have enriched our lives.
And taught, yeah. And taught us so much about ourselves and other people and how to be accepting. I agree. We learn so much, and, you know, I'm grateful too. Although I'm not saying it's easy.
No way. That's right. It's the marathon. You're running, and nobody's throwing the water bottle at you. And nobody's throwing a fan in your face. You're running.
Oh, you are. Right. And you get tired. And let's say that too. Everybody gets tired. That's why you need to have some things in place, because...
Yes, self-care. And you can't feel guilty about self-care. Because if you don't refuel your tank, you're going to burn out. And I don't care how sexist it sounds, the mother or the primary caregiver, if you go down, everyone's going with you.
And I hear you. So I wanted to ask you too, and the financial hardship was there a way, like, how did you resolve that when you had the financial hardship? And this is what I wanted to ask you two questions on this, because what if you don't have the resources to pay for therapy? I know families that are facing that. They don't have it. Any recommendations for that?
There's a lot of things you can do on your own. You can make your own sensory bins. A new series of social skill picture books. Mm-hmm. Not the old for older. There's a new picture book, and I want to share it because I think it's important. It's written by two speech therapists whose target is to pre-teach social situations that cause stress to mommies and our children, like in the supermarket and birthday parties.
Yes.
And it's called Lou Knows What to Do. And it's written by these two young, cutting-edge speech therapists, Kimberly Tice and Vanita Litvick.
All right.
And when you can pre-teach at such a young level what to expect before you go, you've got to be proactive as opposed to reactive.
Right. And I think that's huge, everyone. So pay attention to that one. That's a great tip.
And another thing, when your child has a birthday, I know what I've done for things that we couldn't additionally afford. We were lucky that our family would say, what do you want for his birthday? And I would say, we need money. We want to sign him up for horseback riding therapy. So that was a birthday present that everybody chipped in for. Chip-in gifts, whether it's birthday. Now, what they didn't have that there's today, especially for families that have two children on the spectrum, start a GoFundMe page. I worked with a family that had twins, that has twins, both on the spectrum, in addition to another severe disability, and they could not afford any more therapy. They're babies. These children need more.
Yes.
I said, go start a GoFundMe page. Oh my God, the response. They are now getting therapy. Their kids are making incredible strides.
Wow.
There's a beautiful community out there. There are scholarships through Autism Speaks.
I want to interject a second because the magazine we never really focus on just one specific disability. Like, I know we're talking with you because your son has autism, my daughter's high functioning, but the magazine itself, we try to make sure what we're sharing about with autism also applies to the other children as well. Whether your child has Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, there's still things you can do on your own, the same. And that's, I know I keep sharing little tidbits from my life, but that's really how the magazine got started, because my daughter, I didn't have the resources and I needed help. And at the time, she didn't have the label of autism. I couldn't get anybody to say, because she's always been social. So back in the day, they wouldn't give me the label. With no label, you get no help. So basically, I learned things by going to an autism meeting just because I was like, well, I need help. And they're the only people that are at least talking. So
yes,
it at least started me down a path of I'm going to start some of these things on my own. So I just wanted to bring that up to other parents that are listening or other people that are listening, that we're sharing about autism, but it relates to
any disability. And you have to be relentless in looking. And that's another thing. Please don't send your child to school and assume they know everything and they're going to tell you everything, because they're not. You're your child's best advocate. And the older you get, that your child gets, remember, you're their role model, teaching them how to self-advocate.
And that's huge too, because I was just speaking to someone else in this issue about, he runs a company that hires children with disabilities. And he was saying they have to be able to speak up if they think something's not correct. He's like, those are the ones I can move up to higher positions, because they can say, I don't think this package is right. But if they just sit there and just keep going, which is a form of advocating, speaking their mind. So that's something too. And that goes back to what you said of the aide sitting right next to him. I mean, I know my daughter had the paraprofessional, and I fought really hard to get her one. But then I realized, similar to you, Yes, but now that now my kid thinks she can't do anything unless someone's standing right next to her.
Exactly.
That doesn't help. Okay, no, you can do it by yourself.
Right, and I'm still dealing with
I'm still dealing with that, and she's 21. So yes, I'm still, you can do it.
Yes.
No one has to.
My big thing is believe in yourself. I believe in you.
Yes, you have the tools. I showed you. Try it. If you get stuck, I'll help.
Right. Anyway. Or I'll say, what do you think? You give me the answer. And then when it's right, I said, see, you knew the answer all along. Believe in yourself.
That's awesome. Let's get back to our couple of questions. What purchase of $100 or less most positively impacted your life in the last few years?
Okay. One is Amazon Prime.
Get it.
For my son.
Oh, for your son.
It made him independent. He can shop online. Mommy, because he does not drive.
Mm.
So if he's going to run out of whatever he needs, he can order it himself and it gets delivered. And boy, he made a decision. He went shopping and he doesn't have to stress, how am I going to get there? I have to wait for mom, or I have to wait for my coach, my life coach who comes once a week to drive me. It made him independent.
I love that. That is a great answer, because I'm going to do that with my daughter. Didn't even think about that, because mom, I need new shoes. Mom, I need this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh my gosh. Yeah. So, all right. I love that answer. Can you share a back to school tip?
Yes.
You implemented that and followed, because that's the same thing I think you said earlier. Like, it's a, you might know it. We all know things, but we don't necessarily act on them. So is this something you acted on?
Yes. So when my son went back into the public school for high school, he didn't want to take the bus. We lived where I, of course, I could drive him, but he had to earn the ride. He had to earn the ride to school, because we know the kids take a long time to wake up and they're slow. They're slow getting ready. They're slow packing up. They're slow eating. They're slow putting on their shoes. They're turtle modes. So if you could get ready and on time, you earned the car ride. And in that car ride, you also earned control of the radio.
Mm.
Now, let me tell you, listening to Eminem and Linkin Park at 6:45 in the morning is a little hard to take, but it got him up. It got him ready on time. And the days he couldn't pull it together, then the next. And of course, when you're, I know someone's going to say, yeah, but if they're running late, they miss the bus. So you have to drive them to school. Yes, you do. In silence with no radio.
Mm.
And maybe you put on the station you know they don't like, but you do.
There's consequences.
There is, which meant the next day, now you showed me you're late. Now the alarm is being set 15 minutes earlier, because if you run late again, this time you can make the bus. But if you got up that morning and you made it on time, then I'll drive you.
Wow, that's a great tip. I love that. And what do you think you struggled with the most raising your son? Or what are you struggling with now?
The hardest thing was having family not embrace him. That was the hardest, and I still deal with it. Sadly, his sister. Sadly, I mean, his dad is supportive to a point, but as I'm sure you know, just generally in the field, fathers have a really hard time accepting their son.
Or daughter.
Yes. It hurts me. Hmm. I struggle with it still.
Oh, I'm sorry. And I hear you, because, you know, for many years, even in my own family, I share a little bit, I felt like I had to be the champion between the two, you know, like I had to run in and.
That's right.
You know, like step in, like, hey, there isn't, you know, yeah. So I hear you. It's it's hard. And I feel it's still an issue. I don't think it's resolved even sometimes in my family. Like my older daughter, she gets invited to spend the weekend at the aunt's.
Yeah.
You know, but the, and, you know, so anyways, but it's just, even cousins come down. It's like, she's anyway, it is an issue.
Right. But so let's add this. What they didn't have when my child was growing up was sib shops. Now right. There's sib shops.
Right. And yeah, we did we got to speak with Don Meyer, and he basically said some things that were just fantastic and things I hadn't really thought about, that siblings are almost as important or more important than parents because they're going to be in the child's life longer. So we need to have them on board. I was like, oh, that is so true. You know?
Yep. We cannot forget the siblings.
No. And they need to be, they need to have understanding, you know, about it. I can remember when my daughter was younger too, you know, when we would go take Kaylee to therapy, she would think that, why does she get to go and have fun? You know, because the swings and the different things, like, you know how hard it is for your son. I know how hard it was for Kaylee. It's work. But to another sibling, it looks like, look, that lady's on there swinging her back and forth. They're playing on a ball. They're getting to jump in bubbles, you know? I mean, it looks like it's all fun and game. They get to blow bubbles, you know, why?
Right.
Why you get to do that and I don't, you know?
Right. While we're sitting in the waiting room doing homework and they're in their playing.
Right. It's like, oh, this is not, how come? So it is. Siblings need to understand. So I know that you're at a point right now, because I got to read your essay and everyone else can read the essay too, where you're almost, you can see the finish line in a sense. Not that there, I think there is really a finish line, but this portion of the finish line.
Because now he's really becoming an adult.
So what's next for you?
Spending a little more on self-care, even doing what, but still remaining doing what I'm doing. I'm very involved in autism because I feel very strongly about parents and how we started this conversation feeling lost. There is so much out there today.
Mm-hmm.
Lost is when you and I started. There is no reason to feel lost today. There are so many resources. And all, again, Google it.
Well,
we didn't have that option.
You're right. We didn't have that. But the other thing, too, I think that I hear from other parents is it's infobesity. There's so much info. You don't know. You're overwhelmed by what do I do, you know? So
right. So what I had learned from reading a lot of research papers and where they were coming from, that's how I discovered the Kennedy Krieger Center in Maryland.
Mm.
You need to read. You need to read research. You need to participate in research studies because you're getting cutting edge for free, going back to how to save money on therapy. Mm. Enroll in the free studies that there's so many today. Yeah. We're popular now. We weren't popular then.
Yeah,
we were. Not a trend. We are not getting 15 minutes of fame. This is here now, and it's bigger than ever.
And families need help, and they need to do these things. So, well, I can't thank you enough for sharing with us. So is there anything else you would like to say before we kind of wrap up our conversation?
If you haven't read the poem, Welcome to Holland, I still have the copy of that poem that really reframed and twisted my head back. I have it framed and it goes with me wherever I go, whether I have a copy in my office framed and in my home. And I never forget the tulips in Holland because they're quite beautiful.
Yes, they are quite beautiful. Well, you'll have to, I think we have shared that before, but maybe take a picture of yours and we'll share that as well, because I think that's neat. So I can't thank you enough. I appreciate your story and candor on sharing with us. I think there was a lot of points shared in this podcast that will be helpful to listeners. So thank you so much. And I'm glad we got to meet.
Me too. And thank you for giving me a platform to share and just tell mommies and families we're still here. We survived. It may not feel like it, but not only survived, I have thrived from my son raising me.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, take care. Thank you so much for spending time with me.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
I'm Shantae, and you've been listening to Parenting Special Needs Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're newbies on Instagram. And if you haven't done so yet, please go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe. Then rate and review this podcast. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you soon.